Thank you, Vinny. Well, good morning. Take your Bibles and turn, if you will, to Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 16. This is Labor Day weekend. It's obvious by the size of the crowd. A time of year when we think about work. And for most of us, it's a time to break away from our jobs for at least one day for some R&R. The truth is, you're going to spend about 150,000 hours of your life working. That's a long time. That's about 40% of your waking hours. Now, if you're a mother of preschoolers, that's 100% of your waking hours. If you're a professional, they say that a professional spends an average of 52 hours a week working. If you own your own business, a small business, you work an average of 60 hours a week. Over the course of your lifetime, you will spend more time working, commuting to work, and thinking about work than you will eating, drinking, playing on weekends, and vacationing in the summer combined. Work dominates our life. Wouldn't you agree with that? Work dominates our life. So, if work dominates our life, it would seem that it is important to understand what the Bible has to say about this very important subject related to each of our lives. So, what does God say about work? Well, he wants us, first of all, to enjoy our work. And he also wants us to succeed at our work. There in Proverbs chapter 16, look in verse 3. Solomon says, "Commit your work to the Lord and your plans will be established." Now, here we have a tremendous guarantee for each one of us. Solomon says, if we commit our work to God, then God, in turn, will bless it. But, as is true with all of God's promises, there is a condition. He says, if we want our work to be blessed, then we must first commit our work to God. So here's the truth that I want you to think about this morning. The thing I want you to take away and go back to work on Tuesday of this week, this is what I want you to be thinking about as it relates to your work. If you will commit your work, whatever that work is, if you and I will commit our work to God, he in turn will bless it. If we commit our work, regardless of what that work is, you may be a school teacher, you may be a garbage collector, you may work in a bank, you may whatever, you may own a business. But if you commit your work to God, then God will bless you and you will succeed. So if I were to summarize what the book of Proverbs has to say about how God wants to bless our work, I think there are at least four things that we need to carefully study and consider as it relates to work. First of all, we must begin by planning prayerfully. We must plan prayerfully when it comes to our work. Now, go back a page, or at least in my Bible, you go back a page to chapter 15 of Proverbs. And look what it says in verse 8. Solomon says, "The prayer of the upright is acceptable to him," meaning to God. The prayer of the person who wants to do right, who is trying to be obedient to God, the person who is living right. "The prayer of the upright is acceptable to God." You ought to circle the word prayer there. Now look, go back to chapter 16 and look in verse 20. Solomon says here, "Whoever gives thought to the word will discover good, and blessed is he who trusts in the Lord." You ought to circle the word there in verse 20 of chapter 16. The implication there in chapter 16, verse 20, is to planning. And so if you take these two things together, Solomon is saying, if you want to succeed at your work, if you want God to bless whatever it is that you do for a living, then you must first pray about it and you must plan according to the word or the direction of God. I know a lot of folks who work hard at their job, but they seem to be going nowhere. I mean, they work hard. They put in a lot of hours, and they give a lot to whatever work it is that they are doing. But they feel like they're not going anywhere, that they're not achieving anything. They're not satisfied. They're not happy in what they're doing. Prayer and planning is required if we are going to be blessed by our work. Listen, it's so important that we seek God's guidance, regardless of whatever work it is you're involved in. God, what do you want me to do? That's the basic question. God, what is it that you put me on this earth to do? What is it that stirs me on Sunday that excites me about what I get to go back doing on Monday? What do I wake up every day excited to do? Have you ever run into somebody who really loves their work? They will always tell you, it's not work to me. It's who I am. It's a part of who I am. I'm convinced that that will happen to any of us, regardless of the occupation, regardless of the job, regardless of the profession, if we just seek God's will first by praying and asking Him what it is He wants us to do, and then planning how we can go about doing that. I remember as a young man struggling with what God wanted me to do in my life. I wasn't even thinking at the time, what did God want me to do in my life? I just struggled. What was I supposed to do with my life? I was getting ready to graduate from high school, and I was getting ready to go off to college, and I was thinking, what do I want to study? Where do I want to go to school in order to get the education that I thought that I need? In fact, I even thought about going into the military and serving for a little while before going off to college. You know, looking back, that's probably what I should have done. But I went off to college, and I wasted the first 3 years of college and nearly flunked out. And it wasn't till the summer after my third year, I came home, and I was so confused as to what it was I was supposed to do. I had no idea. I had tried every major you can think of. I started out as a history major. Then I went to English. Then I went to business. Then I went to political science, Jeff. And then I went back to history. I ended up majoring in philosophy of religion. But that summer, when I came home, I was so confused. And I don't know what it was, but God, through the Holy Spirit, led me back to His Word. And I got into the Bible, started reading, and I started praying. God, what do you want me to do with my life? And the first thing God challenged me is, you've got to get back on track with me. And then secondly, as I began to get back on track, God began to reveal to me that it was His will for me to go into the pastoral ministry. I went over and talked to my pastor. The church was right across the street from my house. And I went over and talked to my pastor, and I shared with Dr. Kamak what I was thinking about. Dr. Kamak, in his goodness, my parents had separated at this time, and Dr. Kamak took me under his wings. He took me over to Campbell, drove me over to Bowie's Creek, got me a meeting with Dr. Wiggins, president of Campbell. And Dr. Wiggins looked at my grades And I think he thought, wow. I don't know, but it was the grace of God. I got back into school. And I graduated in two years later, went off to seminary and earned two different degrees. And folks, I want to tell you something. I've never looked back and I've never doubted, because I know that I prayed about it and I sought God's will in his word. And God revealed to me. Now, does that mean that I've never been discouraged? Does that mean there's never been days I wanted to quit and walk away? No, but the thing that held me, the thing that kept me, was I knew, I was assured that this was what God called me to do. This is why I was here. And it was only because I had gone to the Word, I had searched the Word for God's will, and I had prayed earnestly like I had never prayed before. And I cannot tell you the difference that that assurance has made in my life and in my ministry over the years. The first thing, if you want God to bless your ministry, you must pray and seek God's will, search the scriptures for his guidance, and I promise you, God will do that. I would not be where I am today. I would not be in a wonderful church like Cornerstone Baptist Church if it had not been for taking the time to pray and to search the scriptures for God's will 30-some years ago when I was seeking his will for my life. Pray, plan, seek the will of God. That's the first thing if you want God to bless your work. Second, once you've prayed and planned according to God's will, then make a point to work wisely. Work wisely. Now, in chapter 13 of Proverbs, look what it says. Solomon says, "In everything the prudent acts with knowledge, but a fool flaunts his folly." In other words, a wise man thinks ahead. He's talking about preparation. He's talking about getting ready. To ensure success in your work, you must always be sharpening your skills. This is biblical wisdom. Solomon said it this way in Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 10. Look what he says there on the screen. "If the iron is blunt and one does not sharpen the edge, he must use more strength. But wisdom helps one to succeed." You see, success is not a matter of working harder. We need to work smarter. And we must sharpen our skills in order to do so. Now, that's taught all throughout the Bible, if you think about it. The cream rises to the top. God took men like Joseph or Daniel or King David. These were men who kept learning and sharpening their skills. And in the midst of some very bad circumstances, these men rose to the top. Henry Ford said this, "If money is your hope for independence, you will never have it. The only real security that a man can have in this world is a reserve of knowledge, experience, and ability." We must always be learning. The moment you stop learning, you stop leading. Benjamin Disraeli, the former Prime Minister of Great Britain, said, "The one who has the most information is the one who succeeds." The one who has the most information is the one who succeeds. Now, what you don't know, you can learn. That's the great thing, especially in our day. Friend, it's out there. You can learn it. I mean, all you got to do is Google half the stuff you need to know. I had a pain in my neck the other day, and I was asking my wife, I said, "Nancy, there's just this lump back here. I don't know what it is, but my head is hurting." I went back to my desk. I hadn't thought a thing about it. She comes in about an hour later, and she says, "Here's your problem." And she began reading off of and it was exactly the symptoms that I was feeling. And I thought, oh my goodness, it's scary, half of the information that you can get. But you must keep learning, whether it's reading books, whether it's, reading period literature, whatever it is. You must research and learn and do whatever you can to learn more about your work. Well, how do you learn? How do you get better? Let me give you at least two practical ways that all of us can learn. First of all is by making mistakes. That's the hard way. That's the painful way. Trial and error. Abraham Lincoln said, "The man who is incapable of making a mistake is incapable of anything." As in the case of Thomas Edison. Most of you know Edison invented the light bulb. But did you know that he tried over 700 different experiments to discover what would work in the light bulb? Somebody said to Edison on one occasion, "What a waste, 700 failures." To which Edison replied, "No, it's not a waste. I know 700 things that don't work now." Before the iPhone and the iPad, Steve Jobs was fired by Apple. About his firing, Steve Jobs said this, "I didn't see it then, but it turned out that getting fired from Apple was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. That the heaviness of being successful was replaced by the lightness of being a beginner again. Less sure about everything. It freed me to enter one of the most creative periods of my life." Sometimes life hits you in the head with a brick, he says. Don't lose faith. I'm convinced that the only thing that kept me going was that I loved what I did. Friend, we all make mistakes. None of us are perfect. If I had to go back and look at all the mistakes I've made over the years in ministry, especially in my very first church, I mean, look, we all make mistakes, but we can learn from our mistakes. We fail at times, but failure can be good in the long run. Don't let mistakes keep you from succeeding. Learn from them and keep working towards your dream. So that's one way of learning, by making mistakes. But secondly, we can learn by observing others. Now, it's wise to learn from personal experience, but it's even wiser to learn from the experience of others. That's how you work wisely. Go back to chapter 15 and look in verse 22. Solomon says, "Without counsel, plans fail, but with many advisors, they succeed." I've been reading David McCullough's new book on the Wright brothers, and it's a very good book. It tells about their life and how on December the 17th, 1903, Orville Wright was the first of the two who piloted their powered airplane. It actually only covered 120 feet, and the flight lasted a mere 12 seconds. This was done at Killdevil Hill, as everyone in North Carolina knows, which is near the town of Kitty Hawk. Later that same day, Wilbur, the older brother, flew their flying machine 852 feet, and the flight lasted for 59 seconds. But before that historical day, Orville and Wilbur Wright had studied other men and their attempts and failures at flying. They then designed and built their own experimental glider kite, drawing on much they had read about others, much they had observed about birds in flight, and from considerable time thinking. For you and me, the best lesson for learning, for getting better at whatever work it is you're involved in, is by observing others in your field of work. Be observant. Study what other people are doing who do what you do. When I started out as a young preacher, there was a lot that I didn't know. So I would observe other pastors. And every chance I got, I would ask them questions about ministry and about life. and I would take their advice. Men like my pastor, whom I just mentioned, Dr. Jim Kamak, my professor, religion professor at Campbell, Dr. Jerry Wallace, men like Dr. Paige Patterson, Dr. John Sullivan, former executive director of the Florida Baptist Convention, Dr. Jim Bryan, who was my pastor in Fort Worth during my seminary days, Dr. David Garland, who was one of my professors at Southwestern Seminary, Gary Heron, the pastor who married Nancy and I when we were in Dallas, on and on the list could go. Men that I greatly respected and loved, I would meet with these men whenever I had the opportunity, and I would ask them all kinds of questions related to pastoral ministry and preaching. I learned things that I have never forgotten. And today I still observe other men who do what I do. In fact, you'll think this is funny. I'm going to be 61 this year, in case Dave hasn't reminded you of that 1,000 times. But I promise you, every Monday, the first thing I do on Monday morning, when I get into my study at the house, the first thing I do is go over my sermon in my head that I preached on Sunday. And I think about all of the strengths about it and all the weaknesses about it. And I will go back and rewrite that message the way I think it should have been preached to you on that Sunday. You say, well, why do you do that? Because I always want to be better this Sunday than I was last Sunday. And I want to be better next Sunday than I am today. I never want to stop growing. I never want to stop being better than I was a year ago, 10 years ago, or a week ago. We learn by observing other people, talking to other people, listening to their advice. That helps us to sharpen our skills. Well, the third key to job success is to give generously. Give generously. When I commit my work to the Lord, it means giving part of my income back to Him. Now, just go all the way back to Proverbs chapter 3. And look what Solomon says in verses 9 and 10. He says, honor the Lord. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. Now note the promise. If you will honor the Lord with the first part of what you make, He will bless you. He'll prosper your business. S. Truett Cathy, the founder of Chick-fil-A, died just about a year ago. It'll be a year ago this coming Tuesday. At the age of 93, Mr. Cathy started his first restaurant in Atlanta in 1946, which was known as the Dwarf Grill. About 20 years later, he started Chick-fil-A in 1967. At the time of his death, there were more than 1,800 Chick-fil-A restaurants in 40 states and the District of Columbia. Remarkably, Mr. Cathy led Chick-fil-A on an unparalleled record of 47 consecutive years of annual sales increases. Today, Chick-fil-A is worth $5.5 billion. Early on, Mr. Cathy made giving back to the community one of the chief marks of the Chick-fil-A brand. He is quoted as saying, I'd like to be remembered as one who kept my priorities in the right order. We live in a changing world, but we need to be reminded that the important things have not changed. I have always encouraged my restaurant operators and team members to give back to the local community. We should be about more than just selling chicken. We should be a part of our customers' lives and the communities in which we serve. He later added, nearly every moment of every day, we have the opportunity to give something to someone else. our time, our love, our resources. He says, I have always found more joy in giving when I did not expect anything in return. To date, Chick-fil-A has donated more than $68 million to more than 700 educational and charitable organizations. Kathy's charitable giving was grounded in his Christian faith, which, I might add, also kept him from opening his restaurants on Sunday. He believed that Sunday should be a day of worship and a time to spend with family. Many said the move would cost him millions, but Chick-fil-A still outperformed its chief competitor, KFC, last year with only half the number of restaurants. Friend, with Kathy's death, the world lost a very successful businessman who had God as his partner and believed that whatever profit he made should be used for the good of the wider community. He was a generous man. Is God your partner? Have you committed your work to him? Do you give back generously from your financial rewards? Giving is a key to job success. Jesus put it this way in Luke chapter 6, verse 38. He said, give and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Friend, God blesses generous giving. The last thing I want you to see, the fourth key to job success, and I'll be through. We must strive steadily. Now, Solomon says that perseverance, persistence, determination, tenacity are qualities or ingredients, necessary ingredients for success. That's the ability to strive ahead, to persevere in pursuit of your dream. Look what he says in chapter 12, verse 24. The hand of the diligent, the hand of the man, the hand of the woman who will persevere will rule, while the slothful be put to forced labor. He says in chapter 21, verse 5, the plans of the diligent lead surely to abundance. You see, successful people don't give up because of a small setback. They persevere. They keep on trusting God. They keep looking up, doing their duty, even through difficult circumstances. Helen Keller said on one occasion, we can do anything we want as long as we stick to it long enough. Charles Spurgeon said, by perseverance, the snail reached the ark. David Lloyd George said, there is nothing so fatal to character as half-finished task. I can still hear my father to this day. Son, if you're not going to do it right, don't do it at all. Bill Byrd, in case you're taking notes. You probably heard that too. It wasn't original with my father, but he pressed it upon us as if it was original. Zig Ziglar said this, there are very few problems that pure dogged persistence won't eventually solve. So, if you want to be successful in your work, if you want God to bless whatever it is that you do, then here are the things that I would suggest. First, pray and seek God's will. Because here's the real truth. Some of you are discouraged today. You're not looking forward to getting up on Tuesday and going back to that job. You hate that job. You'd give anything to have another job. You're frustrated. You're sick. You're tired. You're sick and tired of being sick and tired. You wish you could do anything else but what you're doing at the moment. You're ready to walk away and find something else to do. And you need some motivation. Well, here's some motivation. The Apostle Paul says in Colossians chapter 3, whatever you do, work heartily as working for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. Jeff was talking about having good days in his life and looking forward, as we have sung, to that glorious day. Friend, your work may be difficult. It may be hard. Maybe you didn't pray and you didn't seek God's will, and then you're in a job you don't like and you feel like it's too late to get out of it. But I would ask you to think about this. Take that same job, which you may not be able to change, but you can change your attitude, and you can work heartily at it as unto the Lord. I read this somewhere. Be not always wanting some other work to do, but gratefully perform the task the Lord has given you. So if you want to be happy at your job, pray, seek God's will, work wisely, work wisely. Do your best to learn from your mistakes. Observe what other people are doing in your line of work. Become a generous giver of your time, your talent, your treasure. Give from the blessings that God has poured into your life. And keep striving, persevering, until that day, that glorious day, when Jesus comes back, or he takes us to glory. And then we stand before him and hear him say, well done, good and faithful servant. Would you pray with me? Father, thank you so much for work. Thank you for the jobs that you have given to each one of us.